are now listening to Talking Transparency, the podcast where trans parents talk transparently, hosted by Thea Ross, Melissa Lukson, and Cody Connor.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Melissa.
I'm Cody.
And I'm Thea.
On today's episode, we are talking transparently with Jeremy Rodden.
Hi, everybody.
He is a former candidate for Virginia House District 90 and a former candidate for the Chesapeake School Board, and is the co-founder of Pride in the Peak. We will be talking with him about his family and his trans daughter, and also about the Chesapeake School Board and adoption of the trans model policies that we've talked about for our city here in Virginia Beach. And we will be getting his thoughts on that. But first, let's see what's coming up in the community, Cody.
All right. So April 18th is our next trans family dinner. And this month is a little bit different. We switched the date from our usual Sunday to Thursday because we'll be doing it at ODU this month. And
that's awesome.
You got the menu yet?
Yes, we've got a springtime buffet. We're going to have chicken and rice, all sorts of vegan options. And it's going to be at ODU's web center from 6 to 8. Yeah.
Sounds good. Our 25th is our Know Your Rights workshop, which actually we did get in touch with the ACLU.
Exactly. We're going to finalize all that. You can go to our website, to kalescoalition.com/events. There should be details up there. You can sign up. It's a free workshop for trans and queer folks to learn your rights.
Love that.
April 27th is our next D&D club at the 757 Creative Reuse Center. I think I've almost got my wife completely on the hook. Yes. She has done nothing but binge that Dimension 20 D&D show.
Oh.
And so
I don't know if I can be that furious.
Oh, no, it'll be great. I told her, I was like, you're going to be a pro. Working up her confidence. I'll get her there. May 19th is our May Trans Family Dinner. May 23rd is our next workshop. Is that still the t-shirt making workshop?
Yes, t-shirt making workshop. And it's going to help us a lot of fundraising stuff so that we'll have things to go to help, you know, throughout Pride to sell for all these different tabling things so that we can fund the trans family dinner throughout the next year. So super exciting.
That's great.
And then rounding out May is our May D&D. And then we get into June, which is super exciting. Pride Month.
Happy
June 1st. Month. Right out the gate is Portsmouth Pride. And then June 9th is Pride in the Peak. June 17th is Ghent Pride, which I know we'll be tabling at Ghent Pride for sure.
Yes, yes.
And then June 21st through 23rd is the Big Hampton Roads Pride. So
awesome.
Lots of stuff exciting the next couple months.
I'm sorry, y'all, but these jets are active tonight. The F-14s or 16s or whatever they are, that's what you're hearing.
They're the FUs.
They are the FUs. Yes,
I still blame David Culpepper. But regardless, thank you so much, Cody. And, you know, I appreciate you being here tonight, Jeremy. First, I just want to jump right into it. You know, what got you into activism? What got you from, you know, working 9 to 5 to going out there and making a difference in people's lives? Or has this been like a lifelong thing for you?
I don't know how much it's been lifelong. I think I really started getting more involved, as many people did, after the 2016 election. It was kind of an eye-opening one for a lot of us. You know, at the time, I was my primary job was a stay-at-home parent. So from relocating from Philadelphia down here to Virginia in 2010, you know, my wife is a physician. I was a high school teacher, so when you have to choose which one of those two is going to stay home with the children, it was kind of an easy decision. But after 2016, I started paying more attention to, you know, politics in general, local politics, local issues especially. That was the first time I joined the Chesapeake Democratic Committee. It was also when I started volunteering, getting out of the house more and doing more stuff. But things really ramped up near the end of COVID. Because of personal reasons, I started paying way more attention, especially during COVID, to what was happening in our school boards, you know, and the decisions they were making and the impact they had on our children. Chesapeake was not a shining example of how to handle things during COVID. And as I started paying more attention, I started getting more and more angry and frustrated. And it really kind of came to a head after the model policies were introduced under Governor Northam. And that's when I started actually showing up at school board meetings to advocate for the adoption of Governor Northam's model policies, because they were actually there to support children like my daughter. And then, of course, at that time, we had a school board that was 8 Republicans and 1 Democrat who were not supportive whatsoever in regards to trans students. At the time, my daughter was homeschooled because of anxiety and struggles being a trans teenager in the public school, and ultimately she stayed homeschooled through the remainder of her high school years and just took her GED last summer and passed it on her first run. So she's starting at Tidewater Community College this summer, which we're excited about. Okay. You know, and I like to point out when I talk to the school board, especially the ones that were on the board back then, that my daughter is thriving despite them, not because of them, which is the opposite of what you should be trying to do. And you don't want to, you shouldn't want to hear that if you're on the school board.
No.
That's right.
So that kind of all culminated in 2022 running for school board, and it was my first time ever running for office. I ran for school board predominantly on those types of issues. You know, the COVID was over to the extent that it's ever going to be over for us as a thing. But really the lack of support for our trans students, for LGBT students, you know, it was a challenge. And that's why in this simultaneously with running for school board, my campaign manager was also my partner and co-founder of Pride in the Peak. We did that my first year while running for school board. We decided to, you know, start Pride in the Peak because we realized how big the need was in the community. I was substitute teaching with the school district. You know, I wasn't ready to go back to work full time yet. And the more time we spent in the schools and around the children, we realized that we needed, the Chesapeake didn't have a Pride event. Mm-hmm. Which is ironic because Hampton Roads Pride, for a lot of people that don't know, started in Chesapeake originally.
Chesapeake Park.
And kind of got flushed out of Chesapeake over time and, you know, landed in Norfolk where it is now. But Pride in Hampton Roads started in Chesapeake. So we're kind of happily taking that back and reclaiming that. And, that first year, the event had 300 people attend. But we had no protesters, no problems, no issues. Melissa was there.
Well, it's really, so it's interesting because I was trying to go back in my head and say, like, how did we meet? Didn't I reach out to you because did I see you speak at a school? Did you speak in Virginia Beach or was it just I was paying? How did we end up?
I don't know, connected, in all honesty.
I feel like I saw you speak, and I think I might have messaged you or something. I feel like that's how we...
Yeah, or it may have been the political side. It may have been at a political event or something.
I definitely didn't meet
you. No, because you weren't really as involved yet that year.
I wasn't as involved. Yeah. I was just starting and trying to figure out my who's, you know? And I don't know, Jeremy and I just connected probably because we're extremely progressive people who are very, very tired of the system. But we find ourselves having to work within the confines of the duopoly. That's a big challenge. And so for Jeremy and I, it's like you find, you know, people that are as involved as you and who think like you, you're like drawn to those people. Right. And Jeremy's got great perspectives, you know, on lots of things and all. I've asked him and I'll, you know, I know we try to share information because even though he's in Chesapeake and I'm in Virginia Beach, but then Jeremy was like, I have this idea with Amber. And like, I didn't know Amber. And he said, hey, are you interested in, you know, with Pride in the Peak? And that's, that's really, then I was like, yeah, I'll come to that first like meeting, right?
The first meeting at Garage Brewery, in Greenbrier with we had about 7 or 8 people that came to that meeting. That was kind of the...
And then I agreed to be a sponsor.
Which was huge that first year because we were starting with nothing.
Right.
You know, and it was, the response to it was so positive and so overwhelming, and we didn't have any vendors because we put it together in about 5 weeks. So it was really just, we got community organizations. We had about 15 to 20 community organizations right at that little Love Park right next to City Hall in Chesapeake because we wanted to do it right next to City Hall. There was kind of a message there as part of that. But the response that we got and the positive feedback that we got from students, from children who felt comfortable being able to go, from parents who either were part of the community or just supportive parents who never felt comfortable taking their kids to some of the other Pride events because they're much more adult-oriented and focused. They're parties. You know, we referred to the first year as a picnic, not a party. Yeah. But we found that has opened the door and made it more palatable for maybe some of the more conservative members of our community mm-hmm. in Chesapeake because they've seen how it's different. And if you Google a Pride event, mm-hmm. the pictures that you see are like, I can't take my 8-year-old to that. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that because it was designed right. for adults, right, you know, in the first place. Yeah. It was adults that needed it.
Right.
But we're at a point now where we have the next generation that also needs it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's an evergreen conversation. And I don't even mean to call it green. It's more like an ever-yellow conversation. It's a sort of like, you know, a kink at Pride, what is acceptable at Pride, and the limits of the mm-hmm. self-expression, all those sort of things in the fine line. I know for me, I don't even like to frame it so much about what is or isn't appropriate for kids, because that's a very subjective line for a lot of parents. I like to think about it more about the loudness. Mm-hmm. I had to think about it like the inclusion of alcohol or not, mm-hmm. Because, you know, and this doesn't necessarily have to do with conservatism, but it has to do with sometimes like a large portion of the trans and queer community are autistic, mm-hmm. are sensory sensitive. When we talk about the entire community, I know that there are so many folks who don't want to come out because it's like, well, I can't drink. Or I'm not going to be out there, you know, mm-hmm. and with super loud music and all this. So that's why I love to hear this work that you're doing. I'm impressed mm-hmm. that you've been able to do it because I know that it's difficult. Let's get together with a knitting group. Let's get together with something. Mm-hmm. Let's have a picnic. Let's do something with that's very family oriented. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a lot of times it's not in competition. I don't ever want to frame it as in competition with Pride in general as a protest.
No, but really like, has been a great compliment though. Like mm-hmm. the Pride in the Peak is such a great compliment to the HR Pride event. And I mean, as a parent who did take my 8-year-old to HR Pride at Tamboy Park, I feel like I have pictures with Savannah, who's now, 24, maybe she wasn't 8, maybe she was 10, but she's going to be 24 this year. And like, we have always been, you know, that family that would take it, but we also have been I say that, you know, we're a sex positive family, and that we have always talked about that very openly. So if the kids saw something like at the Pride event that they might question,
like as
my
a child,
my kids were pretty comfortable like saying something, especially my sarcastic ass kids. You know what I mean?
And we did too. I mean, I had taken my children when they were younger to Baltimore Pride and years ago and things like that. Which, but I think I like the way that you put that. I think that is kind of, you're right. That's kind of more the thing. So you know, my daughter, she's 18. You know, she's trans. She is also, you know, on the spectrum. And, mm-hmm. You know, there is that kind of, you know, wonderful overlap. But I think the loudness, I think, was the mm-hmm. good way of saying that is, and I think that's, again, a secondary benefit of not having alcohol, of not having mm-hmm. that party vibe. Mm-hmm. People who were at the event, especially last year when it grew from 300 to 3,000 people in a single year, everybody we've spoken to, whether or not it was vendors or some of our community partners, you know, any of the attendees, our food trucks, the vibe was just that. It felt safe. It felt comfortable. It felt like anybody could walk up and it was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, we had it right at City Park, right next to the basketball court. We had people that were playing basketball came over and said, "What are you guys doing over here?" and just joined in with us, you know, and there was never a sense of exclusivity at all, whether or not it was mm-hmm. being, you know, a member of the community or not, being, you know, 80 or 8, being, you know, black or white. I mean, the diversity of the group that we had really reflected the diversity of Chesapeake and Hampton Roads in general. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. I think that loudness is maybe even a bigger part of it, mm-hmm. but that just comes by taking away other elements of it. Mm-hmm. So
that's the way I like to think about family friendly things. Cause I think like to think about children need to not be in such hyper stimulating situations all the time. If you have to deal with dealing with lots of kids, taking care of kids, being in those spaces, you want to control the you don't want to be, hey, we've got everything super loud and flashing lights and look at all of those things all the time. And there's a certain time and place. So I love that that it's so big and it's so successful. And I also think to myself, and I want to push back. I don't want to like disagree with the guest. Guest comes on, but I do think that, you know, almost any Pride is fine to take your kid to.
Well,
and that's something that I would also just put out there. And I don't think that you were implying not to be very clear. I don't want to put you in a box.
No, it's great. No, well, actually, we were just last night. We have a board of 5 now for Pride in the Peak. We were having a meeting as planning this year's event and everything. And that did kind of come up because we were talking about the difference between being family friendly, which most, I think you could say in certain elements, most Prides, if not all Prides are, versus family focused. So family friendly versus family focused mm-hmm. is a different differentiation there.
Very much.
Where, you know, you create a family friendly atmosphere by just being open to everybody and inclusive to everybody. Family-focused atmosphere is when you're vetting your vendors and what they're selling, basically saying, okay, we want them to be able to have a certain demographic that they're targeting and that we're going to bring in for them. Same thing with our community resources for families, for children, for, you know, so some of our partners, like places like 4Kids that do, you know, housing insecurity issues specifically for children. So that's kind of where we say family focused, in that as we're vetting our people and our vendors and our, you know, entertainment and anything else that we're doing, we are only bringing in people that understand that. And I think that collectively is what created the big explosion from year one to year two, and how excited people have been since year two, waiting for year three. And then we got even more excitement for year three. But
And you got some big sponsors.
We do. We do. And a new location. So,
and a new location. Yes. So talk about it.
So we will go into that. So we started in September talking with our local Fortune 500 company that is based in Chesapeake, Dollar Tree and Family Dollar. And we finally just finished the... Literally, I think we're signing the contract tonight. I'll be doing that after here.
Corporate bureaucracy.
The challenge of that. Now, I mean, they're a massive corporation.
Yes.
What I've assured people, though, is that throughout this process, and we've had to go all the way up the chain pretty much to, you know, the higher level executives, I think just short of like the top tier team we ultimately have worked with and talked with, at every single stage of it, we knew that these people were legitimately interested in what we were doing. They legitimately believed in it. They actually approached us in the first place because they heard about our event. They had been doing an internal Pride event for a couple of years just with their employees over at their big headquarters in Chesapeake, and they wanted to expand outside. And they've done, they do Toronto Pride, they do San Francisco.
Wow.
You know, they're a large company, they're heavily involved. They're going to do DC Pride this year. They're already signed up for World Pride in 26, I think it is, or 25.
Amazing.
Which is going to be in DC this year, I think. So their commitment to it is legitimate. You know, obviously, we always kind of have a hesitation when these large corporations want to start getting involved.
Of course.
Especially when you have a small, kind of unique grassroots thing. But the cool thing is that throughout this process, they have never hinted or suggested that they want us to do anything different than we've been doing. They're not trying to change anything. They're not trying to take away the atmosphere. They're not suddenly saying we want to have a beer garden, you know, things like that. No, they're saying we want to be involved because specifically of the way that you're doing it. It matches our company's branding, our company's mission for what we want to do for outreach. So it worked out well. And because of that, we're doing it at Summit Point this year, which is right at Dollar Tree's headquarters there. It's, you know, off of Volvo, right between Greenbrier and Battlefield, and doing it more of a street festival, outdoor type of thing, which poses new challenges, but it also is really nice. One of the biggest issues we have trying to do events in June is that we cannot control the weather.
Yeah.
We cannot control whether or not it's, you know, going to be 120 degrees or raining. Doing it at Summit Point with the tall buildings there will actually help with some of the shade and the heat control. If it does rain, we're not going to be on soggy ground. We're on concrete. You know, we're going to be, the streets are going to be blocked off. All of the restaurants and businesses that are there have been updated and told that this is happening. Some of them have already reached out and said, cool, how can we be involved?
That's,
you know,
awesome.
So we're, you know, so we're going to be able to incorporate it, that way because of the support of Dollar Tree and Summit Point, is really, they're really excited. If you look at their, they're already sharing stuff to their Facebook page about Pride in the Peak.
They,
so it's not a passive partnership. This is not just they're throwing money at us so they can put our name. They are actively involved in helping us take what it is and just make it bigger, but not different. And that's the only reason we were willing to do it, because we worked hard the last couple of years to kind of build something unique. and we weren't, you know, didn't want to let, like, you know, a possible big check from a large company say, okay, now suddenly you're going to do it the same way everybody else does it. It's like, no, no.
Right.
So,
that's,
so it's exciting.
That's great.
It's super, super exciting this year.
And HR Pride is also, are they?
We were one of their partners last year. They helped us some last year, but we were kind of still growing. And this year they are much more actively involved.
Great.
They're fundraising for us.
Fundraising
they're supporting us heavily. You know, they are super excited this year that we have a Pride event in every one of the seven cities, has their own Pride event in the month of June. And, you know, they are kind of embracing one from each city to be basically the Hampton, you know, the HR Pride sub branch with that. So, yeah, so we've been getting way, way more support.
Have your political connections that you've made assisted in any way in getting some of this, you know, because they're much like me, my friend, you're the he's like the Melissa Lukeson in Chesapeake.
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of, yeah. I think I'm still a little
There's only one Melissa Lukeson.
Well, it's true. That is true. I still have had probably more opportunities to go, you know, and just drag counsel for all kinds of things that, you know, just for fun. I said this morning, and I was like, God, if this was ever my motto, but confrontation is my kink.
That's a good one. That's a good T-shirt.
It's a good T-shirt, it's a very right? Good T-shirt. Yeah, yeah. So,
well, it's funny because so you know, as we said, I ran for school board in 22. Yes. Mm-hmm. I also ran for the House of Delegates last year in District 90. For you know, District 90 is the only district that's entirely in Chesapeake. Mm-hmm. It's all of Southern Chesapeake. So obviously, running as a very strong progressive, you know. Mm-hmm.
Randy Forbes
in Randy Forbes' old area with Jay Leftwich, who is Randy Forbes' buddy.
By the way, Randy Forbes, just for our listeners, if you don't know, he was the guy who started the Congressional Prayer Caucus, official Congressional Prayer Caucus when Randy Forbes was congressman.
Literally once introduced a bill while he was a congressman to try to declare the Bible the word of God or something like that in an official bill. I mean, it didn't go anywhere, but if he were still in office right now, he would be right there next to Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and all of those crazies. He'd be, you know, Mike Johnson's right-hand man if he was still in Congress. But fortunately, we fixed some gerrymandering and he was gone. Mm-hmm. But he still actively controls the Republican Party of Chesapeake, and especially in Southern Chesapeake, which is the stronger Republican area of the city. Mm-hmm. For those not familiar, it's the more rural area. It includes Hickory and Grassfield and Great Bridge. And pretty much, you know. But
do you think we could get him on the show?
Oh, Randy? Probably not. No, I don't think.
Please, Randy, come on. We're going to have a lovely conversation.
I mean, I could put some feelers out. I don't know. I do have some friends on the other side because there are some still some rational Republicans out there.
I had lunch with a Republican last week.
Well, but that's actually, so when you say have the political connections and stuff helped with that, in some ways I'd say yes, because while I'm not afraid to run a campaign and run as who I am, we also still were professional. We were still respectful. I had no issues with my opponent. When you looked at some of the really ugly stuff that was out in some of the campaigns, you know, I was, I talked to Delegate Leftwich on election day and I was like, look, I said, I'm proud that we ran our campaigns. We went out to the community. We shared things out there, but neither one of us got into any of that type of craziness. Mm-hmm. And I can live with that, you know. Mm-hmm. I would much rather it be that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, 10,000...
But if he thought you had a chance in hell...
He probably would have, yes.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. Or if he didn't, people around him would have.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, 10,000 people, 10,000 people in Southern Chesapeake voted for the person who is the co-founder of Pride in the Peak, who has a trans child, who never shied away from
after-school Satan Club. Everybody thought he was the organizer. He was not.
Yes,
just
thank you
for public
for clarifying that.
For clarification, Jeremy Rodden was not. But either way, there's nothing wrong with the after-school Satan Club, and
they dinged me on it because I was supportive of it, and I thought that it, the point of it, and you know, and we can if we want to get into some of the dumb
Jeremy
stuff.
Was like, I'm going to run for school board.
Actually, that was after
was
the election.
After
that
the
was
election?
After the school board election.
No,
so,
but it was before your delegate.
But it was before the delegate race. But honestly, that kind of does kind of segue into some of like how that connects with the school board issues and things like that, because that was an important issue that they were on the wrong side of.
Absolutely.
But as I was saying, the working in the political realm, not being afraid to be a Democrat, to be afraid who I am, I have had decent conversations with Republicans on Some of them on the school board, there are a couple that I think are decent human beings up there. There are a couple that are very much not. And same thing with city council and some of that. So it's made it easier to have conversations. We talked months ago to Mayor West about Pride in the Peak, mm-hmm. And about the continued growth, about, how much we wanted to do it, how much we're still at the point where every other Pride event has their city is one of their sponsors. Chesapeake mm-hmm. still does not. We're the only one that does not have our city seal, like, on our flyers, like, as a sponsor. Now, we get a lot of support from people within the city, the departments, mm-hmm. Parks and Recs has been
individuals
awesome.
The
library is going to be there with their van this year, mm-hmm. All these types of things. The health department has been with us since the first event. Mm-hmm. Chesapeake Thrives is going to be there sharing information and resources. So we have all of the support of the people who actually run the city.
Mm-hmm.
Just not the people who were elected to run the city. But we think this year, obviously with Dollar Tree and Summit Point, because the city really wants Summit Point to be that kind of economic center, like town center in Virginia Beach. That's what they're trying to turn it into.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't had a large-scale event like this there yet. So we're kind of getting to demonstrate and to bring people in, because a lot of people still don't even know what's back there. People that live right there, and people live in Greenbrier and Greatbridge don't know about the amazing restaurants that are back there, that there's so much cool stuff going back there, and it's building into this wonderful thing.
That's awesome.
What I've joked is it doesn't feel like we're in Chesapeake anymore. We walk in there and it's like, okay, I feel like I'm in a town center. I feel like
really?
I'm in, the Neon District or town center of Virginia Beach. That's what it feels
very
like.
Very cool.
And I'm like, that's what they've built there, mm-hmm. but they haven't been able to get enough people to truly go there to really build it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Summit Point sees the draw of our event mm-hmm. being there to make more people aware of it. Going into the after school Satan Club was really funny, which did come out, and I, when that first came out, it was shortly after the 2022 election. So mm-hmm. we had just,
that's right.
We had just had a very poor election as a party, the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was now 9-0 Republicans on the school board, which is where mm-hmm. it currently stands. Mm-hmm. Their response to that really just further demonstrated, though, their lack of wanting to deal with anybody who didn't fit the certain mold that mm-hmm. they expected. I had shared about it because it was at my youngest child's was at the school where they mm-hmm. were doing it. So I had shared it on my public page, which still kind of had the political mm-hmm. focus of mm-hmm. people knowing what I was doing, that I was planning on signing my child up for it. I thought it was exciting. Mm-hmm.
And for the record, you are an atheist.
Correct.
Not a Satanist. And there is a difference. And we, as atheists, we can support, the Satanic Temple and what they're doing. But it just, people correct. Just automatically assume
that because I was supportive of what they're...
openly atheist.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeremy running for school board was openly atheist.
Yeah, I've been endorsed by the Center for Free Thought Equality the last mm-hmm. 2 years, which is the political side of the American Humanist Association. Mm-hmm. So it's... it's not like I've ever not been open about who I am and what I believe and, running as an open humanist. But it showed this new school board, how were they going to react to something like this? Because, we had 6 new members out of the 9, and they really fumbled that one because mm-hmm. they were driven by, some of them, by their own ideology and their own faith mm-hmm. to really go against, the free speech and, mm-hmm. The way that the Satanic Temple does that, they only show up at schools where there is a good news club, mm-hmm. which is a child evangelism organization. Mm-hmm. That is exactly, they are run by the Child Evangelism Foundation.
Yes.
They don't mm-hmm. hide. Their whole purpose is to get children there and tell the children to go preach to other children.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they operate.
Yep.
Which I got a big problem with that being in our mm-hmm. schools.
Yep. Same.
And that's
why I went out to Chesapeake and spoke at the school
and that's
board.
What the TST does is they bring an alternative to that, mm-hmm. basically. And their attempts, they spent months trying to push it, trying to stop it, trying to find ways around it, trying to make
it
hard.
To the point they got sued.
That the ACLU got involved to defend them, and they ultimately, and here's the funny end of that story, and a lot of people don't know the end of that story.
Right, yeah.
Is they ultimately, their decision was they changed the way that they allow building permits. And if you're going to do an there's new rules, and these rules apply to everybody, which is appropriate. Mm-hmm. But the biggest one was that the you couldn't meet directly after school. You had to come back at like 5 o'clock.
Yep.
And then you could use the facility.
And you had to pay for private
security and things like that. Yeah. And again, they applied this to everybody, yeah. So that's mm-hmm. that's fine. If you, you know, so that's how this works.
But
all
I bet
or nothing.
The good news yeah. clubs never had security.
Well, what and that's where this the end of the story comes mm-hmm. in. The After School Satan Club is no longer at B.M. Williams mm-hmm. because the Good News Club is no longer at B.M. Williams. They didn't want to do it anymore because the appeal and the draw of their thing was that people used it as free daycare after school.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was going to have to come back at 5 o'clock, well, people didn't want to do it anymore because they're like, well, that defeats the whole point. I'm going to be home by 5 o'clock.
Exactly.
And so they left because they did not have easy access to children.
Look at how nefarious that is, though.
It's gross.
A child evangelical foundation. You prey upon the working class people who need after-school care and likely are seeking this out because they can't afford the paid programs like the YMCA and things like mm-hmm. that. And it's just so disgusting because it's so nefarious.
Behavior.
It's predatory behavior.
We'll go after the weakest.
And
yes.
They can't defend themselves.
And then you brainwash them.
It's the very definition of grooming.
It is
that they
very...
like to try to throw out in the opposite direction.
Well, we know that all accusations are confessions.
And that's the, you know, that's the part of this conversation that doesn't get brought up a lot. Mm-hmm. And a big part of it is out of respect for people that are Christian, that are religious, that are loving people and have mm-hmm. a perspective on their religion sure. that allows others to be. But a great many of the people that we're talking about a lot, you know, we'd like to think, oh, this, how could they not know this is a bad thing? Mm-hmm. Because to them it isn't. Mm-hmm. All right, killing somebody to them is mm-hmm. not a bad thing if mm-hmm. that person doesn't believe in their God.
Yeah,
it's an acceptable thing. The world ending, them destroying the world. That's going to happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
God's going to do that anyway. This might be how it happens, us doing it. So let's just go on. freedom of speech and all of that, those are things that apply to them because they're right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Not yeah. to other people.
Right.
And so the idea of human rights for everybody or human rights in general isn't really something they believe in.
No,
it isn't. Yeah. And so that's part of the disconnect that we have even dealing with them is because we're coming to them like, hey, isn't it wrong to do this to people? And they're like, no,
not those people.
Not those people.
Not those people. Right.
Yeah. 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 So that leads into kind of gave us an idea of where this school board was going to be. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of. You know, again, I ran at the same time as many of these people. I got to know some of them, and, mm-hmm. and I was like, okay, I'm like, you know, being a Republican or being a conservative is not inherently bad.
Mm-hmm.
How you apply that and then how far you go on certain elements is where the badness comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, like I said, there are a couple on Chesapeake School Board who I think are good human beings, are good mm-hmm. people that are trying to do the right thing. I don't think there's enough of them,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think they're the loud ones.
Yeah.
As you guys have seen
yeah.
throughout the last years, that sometimes just the one or two loudest voices ultimately just take control because everybody else just is sick of it or doesn't right. want to fight or whatever,
mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we're seeing is in Chesapeake mm-hmm. with that and
didn't it take your so we had it a little different in Virginia Beach. We had for. 14 months,
something
15
like that, yeah.
months. We had a core group that grew from 5 students to like up to 30 students. And I would say on an average per school board meeting, so twice a month, we would have an average of like 15 to 20. Okay. And that was for a long time. It just started out small, but
yep.
eventually they recruited. And so the model policies in Virginia Beach were very in front of our faces all the time because of the student activism.
Yep.
And Chesapeake did not experience that.
No.
And so I feel like with Chesapeake, they kind of did what they were doing, what Virginia Beach was attempting to do, which was just like, ignore it. We're going to have to address it. But Chesapeake waited even longer than Virginia Beach, right?
And that's where, like, you know, we've been waiting. We had been waiting for the other shoe to drop since the model policies became official, and, you know, they didn't actually listen to the thousands of comments, and they ultimately put out the same thing that they put up in the first place.
Yeah.
On the state level, and we've talked with people like Equality Virginia and the ACLU, and then, you know, they would ask us, what's going on in Chesapeake? Like, we kind of expected them to be one of the first ones out of the gate with this thing,
right?
Because of the COVID stuff, because of how they handled the After School Satan Club, and I was like, I don't know. I was like, a part of me was hoping that their loss to the ACLU over the After School Satan Club might have kind of made them want to stay away from it a little bit. And our pitch, and like you said, we did not have that big student backing and pushing, but partially because that hasn't been the environment in Chesapeake.
Well,
which is why we started Pride in the Peak in the first place, to create a space that the schools weren't providing.
Yeah.
And not because the school administrators don't want to, and because the teachers and the counselors don't want to, but because of the policies coming down from the school board, that these children don't feel safe and allowed to be who they are in their schools
or their homes to this day.
And for many of them in their homes, and some of the, you know, especially in the southern part of the city, in those more conservative areas, the children don't feel it's safe to do that.
And then how many students do you have in Chesapeake compared to Virginia Beach? Because in Virginia Beach, what, 65,000?
We've got the largest.
Yeah, well, you're about country. Half.
We've got over 40,000.
Is it 40,000?
So it's still enormous.
It's about 40,000. No, I mean, Chesapeake, and a lot of people don't realize this, you know, Chesapeake is the second largest city in the entire state, only behind Virginia Beach. Our population is about 260,000. So...
258, and I only know that because of that
Delegate Fowler's bill that we were hoping to try to get passed.
And she did it at 250 for a reason.
But Virginia Beach still has 450,000. So when we think about, like, okay, there's five kids that started this. Like, that means that when we go over, I mean, just by the sheer numbers of it, we're probably going to have two or three. And when you look at this, and this comes down to the larger point that I want to make, is that they're picking on minorities. They're picking on a minority of minorities, and they're picking on kids. And, you know, how many trans kids are still questioning? How many kids are those kids just want peace? How many of them don't have peace and are trying to find whatever little peace they can, and they don't have the luxury of being able to, or the support to be able to be out there? And that's what really gets me. So I don't think it's you say the culture, and then also it's just the numbers.
There's always a numbers game with that as well. You're talking about a minority of of people, and that's where the model policies are so dangerous. And our approach when we were approaching the school board was really, truly just focusing on the mental health aspect of it and the danger of that. You know, if you are questioning, if you are trying to figure some things out, and you don't, and home is not safe to be able to do that. School is supposed to be the next place where you have that safety. And the way that they worded some of the policies in Chesapeake were, especially the one when it comes to school counselors and what they can and can't talk to students about without parental permission, the actual wording of the policy, which I honestly felt was a typo, but they didn't fix it, was that counselors could not talk to students about gender without parental permission. Not gender identity, gender. When you're in middle school, pretty much every conversation you have has a gender component to it, with hormones, with everything. You know, it's hard to be a teenage boy. It's hard to be a teenage girl. It's hard to be a teenager. Guess what? Middle school sucks no matter what.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with middle school is where you start shaping your identity and understanding who you are, who you might want to be. And it has nothing, not even from a gender identity standpoint, just in general. Like, what kind of music do I like? What are my favorite foods?
These folks don't see race. They don't see gender. They don't see any. What are we just gray blobs walking around? Like,
I know. Right?
Exactly.
At least that's what they say.
Exactly.
Well, that's what they want.
That's what they want everything to be.
Yeah.
You know,
little robots.
Exactly. You know, either robots or, you know, if you've got your
controllable,
if you've got your red dress and your white little hood, we know where you belong.
Exactly.
There's a component of that. But that's what we really tried to emphasize with them. And we're hoping to kind of target that and focus on that element of it. It didn't change anything. You know, we did not have a very drawn out process. And the reason we haven't been organizing and going back to the school board, like you guys still have done to a certain degree, with Newport News is still actively have a really strong, great group that's working in Newport News trying to combat it, because you guys have allies, at least on the board. You have a couple.
Right. We do. Yeah.
Newport News has a couple.
Yeah.
We don't, we have zero. We know we have zero.
That's wild.
And the actual ultimate vote, there was zero discussion, zero conversation. They just put the policy up, all voted yes, moved on. So one of the things I envy about the chaos that I've seen in some of the Virginia Beach meetings is at least they're talking about it publicly. They're fighting on both sides. They're arguing. They're bringing their reasons why they believe what they believe. Whatever.
There's dialogue. There's discourse.
And it was the same thing I observed when it was time to to evaluate whether or not are we going to put masks, take away masks, the masking policy from COVID. I remember the same exact night Virginia Beach and Chesapeake met to do it. Chesapeake voted to remove masks. No conversation, no dialogue. The only person who spoke against it was Dr. Pat King, who is the only Democrat on the board, who's also a doctor, who was like, this is stupid. We're not ready for this yet. But she was the only voice and couldn't really speak to it. Actually, I remember this distinctly. She was home with COVID at the time. She was on the phone, like she was dialed in, basically, because her seatmate had COVID the previous meeting.
And gave it to her.
And gave it to her, coughing, didn't wear a mask. Yeah, it was Colleen Leary.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, but my point on that is that at least we see the conversation, the dialogue, the way government's supposed to work, transparent, out there. You have these conversations. If you're an elected official, you should be explaining why you're voting a way that you vote. Mm-hmm. And none of them did that. Two of them made statements at the end of the meeting. And I haven't seen either one of them yet, because I'm going to say something to them when I do see them. There's Kim Scott and Amanda Dean, of course. They made some sort of comments at the end, like, oh, we wish the people that were speaking out against it had stayed so they could hear our reasoning. It's like, that's not, you're supposed to give your reasoning before you vote.
You're supposed to have discussion. Nobody made a motion for discussion because you didn't want to talk about it.
Correct. Because, again, because it's nine Republicans and they predetermine what they're going to vote on. They already know. We know they talk about things in the closed door meetings that they're not supposed to, but there's nobody in that room to go against them.
That's right.
I mean, that's why I wished I had one. Even if I was the only Democrat and couldn't do anything, I wouldn't have let them. I would have come right out and said, when they say, oh, we're going to confirm that we only spoke about things in the closed meeting. No, we didn't. They didn't.
Yep.
They wouldn't do that in front of me, but they'd probably still do it privately, but can't control that. But that goes into what you were saying about Delegate Fowler's bill and why that's so important is because Chesapeake is still all at large.
And that's how they have 9-0.
260,000 people, 352 square miles.
Yep.
Very diverse, different sections of the city. Hickory is rural and, old school and still is about farming, with the exception of the fact that they're turning all the farms into high-density housing, which, that's a whole different... That was actually a big part of my campaign for the House of Delegates last year because of, that was important to the people that were in that district.
Yeah.
Hickory is not South Norfolk. It's not Western Branch.
Right.
Deep Creek, Indian River. These are very different demographics. They're very different populations. They have different needs, different issues, and they don't have anybody representing their specific needs. Most of city council lives in Greenbrier or Graybridge. And most of the school board lives in Greenbrier and Graybridge. Same way that before you guys got the fix in Virginia Beach, where they all were from the oceanfront.
That's right.
The oceanfront controlled everything for the entire city.
Right, oceanfront and Shore Drive, like up that corridor.
The Northern Neck.
The Northern Neck.
Yeah, exactly. But they controlled all the decision-making for the entirety of your massive city with 460,000 people in it.
But almost how much of the capital? Because when you really talk about like the property owners, I'll get messy with the conversation. I'll be like, let's talk about because the real truth of it is that it's not just they have political power and connections. They own the businesses. They pay
they own the property.
They have money. And that they use that money and privilege and power to get where they are and maintain that.
Right.
So I just want to be clear because it's like the Northern Neck, we talk about those folks. I love them to death when they pay.
That's why they want the at-large so bad.
Well, that's why they want the at-large so bad because they can
galvanize. Them to do that.
It does. And correct. That's with Chesapeake. That was a big thing. This Kelly Fowler put out a bill. And I think the only city in the state at this time.
It would have only affected Chesapeake.
It literally would have only affected, because there are so few cities in the state of Virginia that, like, are at large still. I mean, and so Chesapeake
is both, and in this counts not just municipalities, but if you want to count whatever the municipal government is, if it's a county. So some of it, you know, we have larger counties.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But Chesapeake is both the largest in population and the largest geographically. Mm-hmm. The only other areas that have at large that are even close to the population are a place like Alexandria. Mm-hmm. Alexandria is about 15 square miles large. Mm-hmm. So you can easily argue that even with the population density, how are you going to break up 15 square miles into districts?
It's this big, exactly. But so a city the size of Chesapeake, they need district representation. The people of Chesapeake are not being represented.
Correct.
And so, but guess who killed that bill? Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah. The chair.
I know exactly which one.
I do too. The chair, and this is publicly, I mean, Marcia Price.
Yeah.
Really?
Marcia Price. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you get Price?
Marcia Price. Marcia Price is the chair of the Elections and Privileges and Elections Committee. Mm-hmm. And the bill was not presented by a Chesapeake delegate, but a Chesapeake delegate was basically told, don't put any bills up for voting essentially for the election. Like, mm-hmm. this isn't.
And I was working with that delegate trying to do that.
Uh-huh. And Chesapeake is not ready for this yet. Now, my big issue when this happened, because I was in the General Assembly when, and I mean, I got this firsthand information from two delegates, so I'm not saying anything. And I really, for the record, I have no issues with Sia Price. I like her. But I have a real issue with this. And if I'm, yep. The one thing that I need to verify is, a family member, is she related to a former senator?
No, she is the niece of a current congressman.
Who?
Who covers the same area she
Bobby
does.
Bobby Scott.
Yes.
Okay. So she's not related to Lionel Spruill.
No. No.
But that, from my understanding, is I can tell you
his star has finally faded.
Yeah.
And we can get into that with the Chesapeake specific stuff.
But my issue with Price is, like, you don't speak for the city of Chesapeake.
Correct.
You're not elected to represent. Now, yes, you are the chair of that committee.
Yes.
But you should have put that to the committee and let the people speak
correct.
On that.
And we never even got a chance to speak on it or anything. It basically
killed by Democrats. Like, yeah.
Why do you think that was?
Well,
what do you think the real?
What does Chesapeake's not ready for it mean?
Yeah. Right. That's exactly right.
I mean, we can really go into. We already brought up Randy Forbes and Lionel former Senator Lionel Spruill,
who's supposedly Democratic, he's not. He's a Republican.
He will openly talk about how Randy Forbes is one of his best friends. Yes. So, and uh-huh. he had been for years, but he had controlled the Chesapeake Democrats for the longest time until my good friend, who I worked very hard for, Senator Louise Lucas, took him out in primary last year.
Yes,
and she is now the head of the Chesapeake Democrats. And it's made a huge, huge difference because she is actively engaged. Last year for Pride in the Peak, she was our second highest sponsor. Mm-hmm. You know, she came in very big for us. We went to her and said, you know, here's what we need. We need security because we know we're going to be bigger this year and we're a little worried. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, cool. Tell me, you know, get me a quote. Tell me how much it is. I will cover your security. And she did.
Yeah.
Without problem. And she was one of the only elected officials that showed up to the event, that was there, came, walked around. You know, we know that she is an avid, true supporter. She's the top donor to Portsmouth Pride every year as well. So that's why I worked so hard for her on that. For many issues, having been involved in local Chesapeake, we needed a change. We needed a break. We needed a new Chesapeake Democratic Committee, and we kind of have that now. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited for the future. I'm excited for this year.
So is as simple as, like, okay, this rich person's friends with this rich person, and those are the people for who D's and R's don't matter.
Correct.
For me, it matters so much that I won't have a future in the city or the state.
It's no different than the old systems of basically a couple of people with power just divvying up a city, saying, you get this part of the city, I get this part of the city. That was the Lionel Sproul, Randy Forbes.
That's why I want to have Randy Forbes on. I want to have this conversation.
I know, right? Well, and he doesn't want to have this conversation. Jeremy and I are disruptors.
Yes. I've told people within my own, because I'm still a member of the Chesapeake Democratic Committee, and I will be, because while most most progressives have left, and I think Virginia Beach is the same way, that I think that's kind of where Melissa and I are similar, in that we're seen as the kind of the last true progressive who's still in the system to a certain degree. Because
I can still tell people to fuck right off, like, but I'm not going anywhere. Like, you're going to have to look at my fucking face, and I'm going to tell you to fuck right off.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And they hate that, because I don't need, Jeremy doesn't need anything from these people. We don't want anything from these people.
And when we've built our own kind of network of I mean, you know,
in
kind
lots of different buckets,
and in an Island of Misfit Toys kind of way, we took everybody who was shunned and created a new coalition that way.
Yeah.
And it's growing, and people are seeing that, and people are taking notice. So when we have all this stuff going on with Chesapeake, you know, that's how I became kind of, you know, the person that if there's progressive questions about how progressives in Chesapeake are going to be, they ask me. Same thing.
Same.
They
do.
That's why I said, you know, when we're excited this year about the possibility of Chesapeake Democrats finally kind of growing some balls for once, and and they haven't since Mayor Bill Ward 20 years ago, 2004 was his last year as mayor. You know, Chesapeake had, like I said, pride started in Chesapeake. We had a black mayor, you know, from the, you know, from the mid 90s to the mid 2000s. You know, it's not the city that people think it is, and it hasn't always been this way. It's grown this way over the last 15 years or so because of the Randy Forbes machine and the way they've controlled things and the way they've controlled all the money and who gets endorsements for the Republican Party, and then you're immediately going to be the next one on city council and school board and all that other stuff. But we're working to break that, and you know, but part of that was a major defection from them this year, and the Democrats didn't have a mayoral candidate that was going to run for mayor this year because mayor's up. We had a couple of strong city council people running, and we got some good candidates there.
This is kind of where Jeremy's going with
and Melissa and I had to talk about this, because she had to get my take on this. But what I can say is that, and as I told Melissa this, before this defection, you know, people that work for this guy called me and said, you know, how is your side going to be on this? I said, we're not going to be happy about it. I mean, what do you think? Because current councilman Don Carey has switched teams. He did not get the Republican endorsement, and he ran as a Republican in 2020 when he first got elected. He ran last year, and in 2023 he ran for House of Delegates District 89. He lost in the Republican primary to the guy who ultimately won, who
Baxter Innes.
He decided he was going to run for re-election as an independent, and then there were some conversations about whether or not he'd be willing to come to the Democrat side and run for mayor. And
I know
that's
Cody,
that's
I
where
know,
a lot of people
Cody,
now, now.
Oh, you haven't even heard. He did serve, because it was serves,
I am told he is no longer on that board. So yes,
the Crisis Pregnancy Center board.
Yes, like, he was on the board of that. So
I know.
Now this, you know, he is pro-life. I use that phrase loosely, because I don't think it means what they think it means.
But, pro-force,
you know, he is anti-abortion. The kind of pitch that they've had is how that, as mayor of a city, you don't have a whole lot of legislative control over that. Doesn't mean that you don't have control and influence over how things are. But where we've had to look at that and say, okay, we had no candidate. Now, I've known Don Carey for years. You know, like I said, some of those connections I've made on city council, he has helped me with some issues. He helped our friend Shauna Turner from HR Mask with some serious issues she was having. She was being harassed by the city and the fire marshals. And, you know, we actually talked to a couple of different people on city council. He was the one that showed up and helped and fixed it and was there. He didn't just come and take a photo and leave. Like, he made sure it got fixed. So I'm like, okay, the guy does do his job. He serves when he needs to. His religious ideology is a huge part of who he is. He's mm-hmm. a former NFL player, if you've ever heard how mm-hmm. they talk after a game mm-hmm. and then, you know, glory to God first and all that mm-hmm. stuff. So that's a big part of who he is. Mm-hmm. What he's been working on, and like I said, he's being supported by Don Scott yep. and Louise Lucas. And I know that they've kind of been working on him and saying, okay, you need to make this a lesser part of who you are as a politician. It can still be who you are as a person, but this can't be who you are as a politician. Mm-hmm. And he's adjusting that. And actually, Arrington just had him on his podcast this past week.
Oh, did
he? Yeah. Okay, it was pretty good.
And this is a really interesting topic to get into, is how much can someone suppress... And also within the framework of a rising, Christo-fascist movement.
Yes.
Wherein your church, regardless of the uniqueness of your community, is within a larger framework that is shifting and is making it difficult. Because I know it's not always about the decisions that the people that you love or the people that you know mm-hmm. make, but the decisions that the people that are above them or people that are on their board or different things mm-hmm. make. So
correct.
Well, and John,
I don't know. Just the whole scenario.
I know. I know. Let me just clarify, though. I do want to clarify on the religion side. And I'm always really sensitive to this because the way I view white churches and the way I view black churches is very different. And one of the things I talked to you about was from the Christo-fascist movement, right? We know that those are predominantly white evangelicals mm-hmm. with a smattering here and there of a person of color because they yeah. are so indoctrinated, right? And their proximity to whiteness because they're in a white evangelical church changes their perspectives, right? But that the one thing I will say about what I know of Don Carey and after talking to Jeremy is I think his religious, that comes very much from a place of just growing up from a black church religious background, right?
Correct.
So I don't see him falling into the Christo-fascist, white evangelical side.
The religion part isn't a problem to me at all.
Right, right, right.
The idea of... I couldn't get mm-hmm. elected by the people that I share the same beliefs with. So now, because the people that I don't share the beliefs with have an opening, I'm going to go apply for that
yeah,
job
yep, exactly.
and see if they're desperate enough to let me do it. And here's the thing is no matter how you spin it, right? You got to take that out of, you can keep it in your personal life, but you got to take that out of your political yeah, yeah. life. At the end of the day, you have somebody faking their beliefs to get votes.
Yep.
Well, he faced that it's question.
Integrity.
He faced that question.
Integrity. I can't trust you.
And he he's going to be facing this question the entirety of this election, as he should.
And I hope
people constantly ask him this. Now, I obviously am not going to speak for him. I don't work for him. I know him. I do believe when he ran in 2020, he was, this was his first time running for office. He'd just been retired from the NFL for a couple of years. He, settled in Chesapeake with his family, decided to run for office. And this is one of the things I told Melissa is he does have a long history of serving. He won when he was with the Detroit Lions, he was their Walter Payton Man of the Year. That is not an award that they hand out lightly to a member of a team. He started nonprofits there, working with underprivileged kids and his Reach Foundation, which still is active in Chesapeake. So I do believe he truly wants to serve. Now, what I think, and I mean, not that I'm advising his campaign at all, I think he needs to lean into and accept a certain, naivete that he had coming in as a first-time candidate. He looked at the two parties, and this was kind of his explanation, was, I thought my values aligned with this party. Once I got in and realized they don't, I started questioning whether or not this party truly believes. Now, just up until last year, he ran for the Republican endorsement and the Republican nomination. So at what point did that really change for him is the question. And I agree with you, Cody. I think most people are going to look at it the same way. And I still kind of feel it the same way, too. There's a certain opportunism to it.
It is 100%. That is part of the Republican playbook.
Now, here's where I see the opportunity from my perspective, and where to a certain degree I'm willing to accept that to a little bit, because I do think that Don Carey is a good man, good person, and I disagree with him on a bunch of stuff. I don't think Rick West is a good person at all. And I disagree with him about everything. So in, you know, sometimes in politics, and this gets into a really huge difference between politics and activism, mm-hmm. That I've talked to people about a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, in activism, there is no compromise. Mm-hmm. There can't be.
Yeah.
You know,
you
have a mission, you fight for your mission.
That's right.
You know, if you get half of your mission, you say, cool, give me the other half.
That's right.
You know, that's appropriate. That's how activism works.
And in politics, you're often taking the ground you can get.
Correct. And when we mm-hmm. say, if I can say I've got this guy who's really, really far right, mm-hmm. and then this guy who's just a little bit more
right
from center, well, I'd rather have this guy. And then guess what? In 4 years, I want to bring somebody up against him who's farther left. You know, there is, and I think he's going to have to convince a whole lot of people.
Yeah, he's going to really have to lean into that. I've been watching where I was and realized that's not who I am. And it would be so much more believable if he did that, like, earlier or maybe even a little bit later, maybe not, like, right after, like, oh, I lost. You know,
in November, 5 months
I don't
ago.
Really like them anymore.
is he voting for Biden? Did we verify that?
Actually, that was one of the questions that CDC asked. And if I recall, I believe he said he did not vote for Trump either time.
Oh, okay. But all right.
Now, he didn't say he voted for Biden, but he said he didn't vote for Trump.
Sure.
So you know what? No, okay. That pulls you at least closer to center, that you're at least not.
Yeah.
You're 100%. Not. Blindly following, and I think that's where his stance on he is trying to embrace the whole nonpartisan thing to a certain mm-hmm. degree.
Well, we also have to remember he was an NFL player, which means he has money, which is always at the center of Republican politics.
Correct.
And so when you have money and you feel like you want to keep that money, the safer bet. It, because of the conditioning, because of the way politics has been done, you know, people are conditioned to believe that Democrats are frivolous spenders, and that's just not
exactly
true.
And that's where some of that comes in, and that's mm-hmm. where, you know, you get that reasonable thing. So, but what I look at, and honestly, it's the same way. Something that I think Democrats do way too much is, you know, kind of is that concept of making perfect the enemy of good, mm-hmm. and not accepting that this is still better. Mm-hmm. And if you look at on the far right, what evangelicals got with Donald Trump was they had a mission mm-hmm. to overturn Roe v. Wade was ultimately all they cared about mm-hmm. to a certain degree. They were willing to overlook everything else about this guy that didn't jive with their supposed worldview to be able to get that mission. And they got
single issue voters.
And Democrats, we're more complex.
We are.
You know, we tend to not be as single issued for the most part. I mean, we've got priority issues.
Sure.
But we're not only making a decision strictly on a single thing most of the time.
We are forced to be constructive.
Correct.
Because we're dealing with people who are anti-government or anti-constructive policy. We're forced in that position. As was saying, poking holes is a lot mm-hmm. easier than having to build something that withstands being poked.
Absolutely.
And then the other part of it, you talk about good people, and this person who is running as Democrat, maybe the most amazing person, honestly, legitimately sounds like a wonderful human being. Because there's all sorts of wonderful people, but at the same time, my issue with it isn't even the disingenuousness of it, because it's politics. Okay, yeah. There's disingenuousness
right.
in politics. I can accept that. What I can accept is the one-way street of it. I cannot run as a Republican. There is no world in which I can do that or play that game. But he can play that game and move through those spaces, even as regardless of race. And to me, that is the difference for doing all of this, the thing that frustrates me. And that's why when I joke about it, we've joked about it multiple times on the show, me running as a Republican or something like that, just because why not?
Right.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Because we understand that there is a one-way valve. We understand that we are the ones that have to be constructive. We're the ones that have to take in and build the big tent. We're the ones that have to make space for those beliefs. But they don't have to make space for me. And if anything, they don't want me to be in public.
Well, and it's a very different, when you look at, because like you said, you know, Democrats are more complicated. And that's very logical. Why? Look at the Democrats as a demographic, right? Who did Democrats represent? Who do Republicans represent for the most part, right?
Wasps. Old rich white people?
Rich white people, right? That's, yeah, that's a very specific one-liner, right? Yep. Who white Democrats represent. Everybody else.
Everybody else.
Everybody else.
Right? And so, and so it's very easy for one kind of group of people that is all one kind of person to be a single issue voter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with that. So, but again, the way I look at that, though, is we need to move the needle. And in Chesapeake, like I said, we have
100%.
9 out of 0 Republicans on school board.
Democrats.
So nine Republicans, zero Democrats. Our city council is 8 Republicans, 1 Democrat. Every single one of our constitutional officers is Republican. So we've got to kind of take whatever wins we can get. Mm-hmm. Prior to Don Kerry coming over, we weren't going to have somebody even running for mayor. Rick West was going to run unopposed.
Which is wild.
Would I have preferred? I mean, you know, and people had asked me about it. I'm like, for one, I'm not running a third year in a row because I'd like to stay married. and for two, I'm like, that's not where I want to be. I don't think that's appropriate for me. Yeah. But nobody else was willing to do it. And that's the thing. We have no bench really built up on our side to be able to kind of step people up to that. And that's kind of where I'm looking and willing to say, from a political standpoint. Again, I have an activist hat. I have a political hat. Yeah. My political hat is I'm willing to work with this guy because if he can truly draw the votes, especially in the northern part of the city where our turnout 2 years ago was like 33% turnout, and that's where our Democrat and minority stronghold is in the city when the southern part of the city had 65% turnout 2 years ago. Yeah. If he can draw those people out, if he can get, you know, if he can win, if he can help get Dr. Pat King on the city council, who, you know, lost 2 years ago by only about, I think it was about 4,000 or 5,000 votes, that she was the next person in line for that. And Les Smith and Regan Davis, who's a who's a middle school teacher.
And if you can do that on at large, that would be impressive.
Exactly. And theoretically, with him, even if you consider him a middle, don't even consider him a Democrat or Republican, consider him an independent.
Sure. You're right.
If he can help bring our three true Democrats who have been with us for a long time and are legit, and you know, one was on city council before, school board before, but not city council, you know, we actually would then flip it. Even if you call him an independent, we'd be 4-4-1.
At least you wouldn't have a single party government.
You wouldn't
anymore,
have a single party
government. We would no longer have a single party government. Right. To me, that is worth swallowing some of the parts I don't like. And guess what? If you're in my party now, you also have to listen to me.
But
and my people.
Here's my thing. Why won't he run as a Republican and then switch to being a Democrat once elected?
Well, this
because that would be actual sacrifice.
This is where some,
that would be disingenuous. That would be actually helpful and constructive.
It could be. It could be.
Because I only see that happen one way.
Oh, yeah, no. Thank you. Well, I mean, technically, he kind of is considering Chesapeake as mostly Republican.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
So, but, I mean, he's going to garner.
And technically, I mean, he is still currently an elected official and has switched parties while elected.
Oh, okay. He is
currently on city council. Now, unfortunately, so yes, technically, there are now 2 Democrats on Chesapeake City Council. Now, unfortunately, the way our city charter bylaws are, he will have to resign from his seat
to run for mayor.
So by the end of June, he will no longer be on city council. He's still currently on city council, but he's got about 2 months left.
Well, as part of the resignation, won't he still be able to finish out until the next
election?
Until
December 31st.
Yeah.
No, that seat will be vacant. In Chesapeake bylaws.
Because in Virginia, they get to fill it out through the year.
Yeah. Mm-mm. In the state.
Well, I'll have to double check that. So maybe I'm misunderstanding that.
Okay, because Chris Taylor, we have the exact same situation going on in Virginia.
I know they cannot appoint a replacement. The replacement will come because his term was ending. Anyway.
Right. Yeah, no, his term was ending, so they were not going to be a replacement. But, yeah,
the Virginia Beach Charter has some very specific language, though, about when they have to vacate.
Yeah, from what I read, though,
it must be in your Chesapeake Charter.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Chesapeake City Charter.
Okay, the city charter, got it.
That he has to resign, and we will have 8 city council members until the next election, which is in November.
Or less if somebody else runs. any of the city council members that run will have to resign. So
only if they're running for, but which none are. Which, the only other the one that's running is the current mayor's request. So that's all. That's
we I have mean, two this, current council members running for the mayor's.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I know, but one's term is ending and one is not. Yeah, so we have
And we're seeing a lot of potential shakeup throughout. I mean, we see in Portsmouth, you know, Lisa Lucas Burke is running for mayor against Shannon Glover, which I think would be interesting.
Listen, no one from the left goes right. If you're on the right, you can only go left.
I agree with you.
You know what I mean? You can only go left. So
no, I think Thea's point on that is it's a one-way street.
Yeah,
you know,
it is an absolute one-way street.
We've seen it already. We saw it in Chesapeake already, you know, years ago. Current delegate Cliff Hayes was a Republican.
Yeah.
And he switched to being a Democrat when he won, you know, went to city council and then went to... Now here's where... And this is what I try to remind people as well. Again, Chesapeake, you can't be me and be successful politically in Chesapeake. I can use the platform. We can make you know, points with it. School board, I had a strong pitch as a teacher, as a, you know, all that other stuff. But that's really not, Chesapeake is very centrist. You know, most people in Chesapeake are very, very middle.
Sure.
And so there's going to be that kind of waffling around the middle, that we have, and when we look at Cliff Hayes's voting record as a delegate and when he was on city council, he's been a good Democrat.
Right.
You know?
And our city council, but like on a local level, because we're Dillon Rural State, you know, I feel that, you know, with our mayoral race, we have 3 Republicans, 1 Democrat running. And we, in this, with the environment that we have, okay, like Chris is somebody who I would probably say people have accused him of being a Democrat, Chris Taylor, right? Yeah. I don't know. I just think everybody has got to move to the, everybody's kind of got to move over to the left if we're going to make any sort of change.
Oh, yeah.
We're literally potentially going to pass collective bargaining by the hair of our chinny chin chin if it passes. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like a 6-5 vote. That is huge progress.
Yeah.
We have to be able to have these discussions, right?
Oh, yeah.
Share our opinions, but you're not wrong because activist Melissa is like, no, fuck that, no fucking way, right? But like I was technically a Republican, right? Because my family said we were Republicans and I didn't know shit about shit, right? And I was completely uninformed.
That's
right?
How a lot of people end up Republican.
That's how most people end up Republican,
that's,
right?
That's and actually when, their target.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But I became a self-proclaimed progressive, right? Not through my involvement in politics. That was my natural shift. And I think my issue with politicians is the shifting while they're already in office, because there's so much distrust. You
I
know
love
what I'm
that.
Saying?
What I want to do is I want to move to Chesapeake. We buy me a house. We'll find some rich person, buy me a house. I'll run as a Republican.
Run as a
Republican. Because we can do this, right?
And then
Republicans
do all
the time. And then once I get up there, I'll just be like, hey.
You just have to be like informed on all the Republican talking points. You have to just be fine completely lying to people's faces.
George Santos did it.
Yes. And then
the woman in North Carolina. Who?
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially what Chris Taylor did. Like Chris Taylor, that's it. Literally, Chris ran as a Republican, and I mean, he still says he's a member of the local Republican Party. But I do know that he's pro-choice, right? Which I didn't expect that to come out of his mouth, right? But they don't legislate. And I think that's really important. And I've said to Republicans, I could vote for you. Like if I were to, I mean, I'm supporting the Democrat, but if I were to, I could cast my vote for Chris Taylor. I could on the same Don Kerry principle, right?
Yeah.
But I have said to Chris Taylor, to his face, I would never vote for you in a legislative position. Never. So I think on a local level, while we still need to be partisan, we need to be aware of partisanship, okay, and what their party is. On a local level, we do have to, we have to remember they can't make laws. They can just do city ordinances, which can still be detrimental to the people. And we have to, that's why these choices have to be smart, right?
Exactly. And that's the same thing. So, you know, when I look at where, 2017, when I first joined the Chesapeake Democratic Committee, and I look to where we are now, we've made massive progress. We haven't changed anything, but we've made progress.
You've made progress.
We've we've built a stronger party. We've been, you know, more consistent. You know, even just little things like, you know, last year's election, you know, when I was running for the House of Delegates, the Democrats covered every single poll. We have 63 precincts in City of Chesapeake. Every single poll, every hour was covered by somebody volunteer handing out ballots.
That's awesome.
And just that alone, building, that's what, when they talk about the building of a machine and the party machine and how you can't win as an independent, that's why you can't win as an independent.
Right. It's the,
because each party has those types of structures in the volunteer base. And, and especially when we're talking about local races, because there is no D or R next to your name on the ballot. The only way people know who the Democrat and who the Republican is by those people handing out that ballot at election time. And yes, do we have maybe 1% of voters who will have researched their local election prior to showing up on election day? Maybe 1% to 2%.
Right.
Most are going to say, oh, you got the Democrat one?
I saw those signs, or I saw lots of signs for that person.
And without that type of machine behind you, you end up with the last sign I saw, or like that person's name, you know, you know, things like that.
Right, and if you try to run outside of the party as an independent, like, you are very disadvantaged because the party doesn't get it. It causes problems.
And this is why, when we asked why is Don making that decision now? Because the lesson was driven home in 2022 in Chesapeake. So there were certain Republican incumbents that the Republican Party was not going to endorse for re-election. They were endorsing other people instead. Susan Vitale was one of them. Now, again, Susan, I think, is a good person. She actually did some awesome stuff. She was the reason Chesapeake's rural broadband got built up the way it did. That was like her baby project as a councilman that really helped the rural area of Chesapeake. You know, actually has high-speed internet. You know, many rural areas are still struggling. If you look up on the Eastern Shore, they got nothing. That was her thing. So she did a good thing from that position. She used that position. But she was on the outs with the Randy and Shirley Forbes, and she did not get the endorsement. She was like, all right, I'm going to run as an independent anyway. She ran an amazing campaign. She raised more money than anybody, any other candidate, and she finished a good 15,000 votes behind the Democrats. Because she did not have the backing of the machine.
She didn't have the ability to staff the polls the way the party does.
And, you know, and she wasn't on that ticket. She wasn't on the, here's all the Republicans you vote
for. Which is why I want to be like Australia, so we can have like 12 different parties, and then you build coalitions. And
and compulsory voting.
And oh my God, thank you! I get so much pushback when I talk about compulsory voting from Democrats and Republicans. And I'm like, no.
You will vote. You will vote. Vote. Just like beat it into someone.
It feels like that.
But that's how Americans take it. But it's like a $25 fine or something in Australia.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to jail if you don't do it.
It's compulsory.
In America,
and you have
make
like
it
a,
that way.
Well, that's true. Sorry. And then we would make it really hard for brown people to vote. And then we would put them in jail because that's what we do anyway.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
But yeah, it's but that I think is the kind of key there. So that, going back to that, and that's, you know, Don Carey is supportive of a district system. You know, so are all the Democrats running. They are supportive of that. Now, they can't change it.
No.
But if they make it a legislative priority from city council to pass up to Cliff Hayes and Bonita Anthony and, you know, and Baxter Ennis and Jay Leftwich and all the delegates that represent portions of Chesapeake and say, this is one of our priorities. We want you to put in that charter, then the argument that Sia Price would have tried to make of the city's not ready for it. Well, if it's coming from the city council,
they can't change it. And the mayoral, is where it's so, here it is, because for us in Virginia Beach, here's the thing. Mayors, like a mayoral position, they're a figurehead, right? It's just like the governor. The governor does not pass legislation, like singularly, right? Okay, so the mayor is a figurehead. But when you're the mayor, the title comes with great, like, you have greater accessibility, right? And so with a mayor that is in support of district system, he has the ability to, he has access, a lot of access to be able to put that kind of message out. Even if there's more people on council that don't support it, yeah, than do, unlike ours where we had the mayor, our mayor, against it, right?
Yep.
And was able to work all these things. And so, I mean, I think that's very important too.
It is. And actually on Arrington's podcast, you know, Don was talking, you know, one of his examples of why the right person as the mayor matters. They were talking about last year in Chesapeake, we lost three of our early voting locations that were shut down. Ostensibly because of, you know, of low turnout, but where they were was, yeah, you know, the Coffee Center in South Norfolk,
right? Uh-huh.
You know, the Greenbrier Library, which Greenbrier actually services a much larger portion of you know, minority voters, and Don used that as an example. He said that when that finally came over from the registrar and got to city council, there wasn't enough time between that meeting and the next city council meeting to be able to change it or request anything.
Mm-hmm.
But as he pointed out, he said the mayor had the power to call a special session.
That's right.
And say, we're going to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't. Mm-hmm. And as Don's like, were I mayor, I would have called a special session. Even if it didn't ultimately change it, even if they made their points, we would have talked about it. We would have taken the time. We wouldn't have just said, well, there's nothing we can do.
Right.
This is what it is.
Unlike our council, who calls special sessions because of the fuck shit that our mayor does.
Yeah, to fix it.
You know what I'm saying? Versus, like, our mayor isn't the one calling special sessions. It's council.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but that's where it comes into the important part. So, you know, and that's where I've ultimately landed on the political side of stuff, is that we have a chance to move things left. Is it as far left as I would want? No. But is it farther left than we currently are?
Progress is progress.
But and again, as an advocate and as an activist, you know, I'm still going to push back on the, you know, model policy issues and things like that. You know,
well, we can't shut up because that's what they want us to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, they want us to shut up.
And I mean, now, but the pragmatic, unfortunate element of that in Chesapeake is it's not going to change until we have a lawsuit or a new governor.
And we have a couple lawsuits in Virginia now.
In York and Hanover. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the family in York, actually, because they used to live in Chesapeake before they moved to York. And Chesapeake's ready. You know, we've talked with Wyatt Rolla of the ACLU. We have a lawyer in Chesapeake who is ready to defend. But the problem is because the policies themselves cannot be
targeted. You have to show harm.
There has to be a shown harm, like the case in York and the case in Hanover.
You have to show harm with the way.
So, now, I don't want that to happen.
Right, yeah.
So it's like, you don't sit around saying, oh, man, I sure hope some kid is hurt by this. I don't want that to happen. So I hope that we don't get that opportunity. I don't know whether or not that's the case, because all it takes is one administrator in one building to really embrace this, you know, bigotry, and we will then have an incident.
But then, even then, if you do have an incident, don't you also have to have, like, parents or different folks who are willing to, like, cooperative or you know, because, like...
Well, yeah, because you've got the only people who have standing are the people who were harmed, and so, you know, and the only way this really the kids that are harmed are going to be parents who aren't supportive, and so it's not likely that they're the ones that are going to sue
But we're seeing more than that, actually, in regards to these laws. We're seeing a little bit more. I don't know if you read an article came out last month where so we know hate crimes have gone up.
Yes.
Right. As it turns out, in K-12 schools in the 28 states that have been passing anti-LGBTQs, anti-trans laws, Virginia being one of those 28 states, hate crimes haven't just gone up. Mm-hmm. In our K-12 schools, hate crimes have quadrupled.
Mm.
Four times as much since they began passing these laws.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Yeah.
And that's the problem, is from a legal standpoint, we can't. It's too many steps removed to say, well, that because of this policy, it has created this environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's the environment It's too far removed to blame the policy, to be able to sue the government
and
or the governor or anything like that.
This is what they want. It's the trickle down, how long things to trickle down. And then you have to have all these studies and all this time in order to prove that these policies who have been harmful, and now a decade has gone by.
Yeah, and we have an entire generation of kids who are already traumatized and now in their 20s and all that other stuff. So, I mean, that's where I look at it from my personal – I mean, I'm not going to stop advocating – our kids in Chesapeake, that's going to happen. Right. But we do that through other avenues. We do that with Pride in the Peak. We do that with the other work that we do to make sure people don't feel alone. And that's what I told you. When we went the last day where they were actually voting on the thing, you know, we had 10 speakers that came and spoke against it, including religious leaders, including, you know, there was one that spoke for it, and he was from Virginia Beach in the first place. Yep. You guys probably knew him.
Chang.
I don't know. He was with the Family Foundation.
The guy. The lobbyist guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, but that's it. So, now, when the speakers came out, though, and we were kind of just doing our huddle up afterwards, and some of them, it was the first time they'd ever spoken. You know, we were super happy and proud that they did. But what we had to remind them was that we weren't speaking to the school board. None of us were.
No.
I said, teachers watch these school board meetings.
Yes.
Families watch the school board meetings.
Yes.
Other parents.
That's right.
I said, what they saw was a whole bunch of people that showed that they are not alone in the city, that they support, that they are still loved, that they can still be who they are, and that even if the school is not a safe place, there is still a place for them in this city.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, again, that was why we created Pride in the Peak. We hated the fact that people had to leave their own city to find a part of it.
I mean, that's like the biggest reason I still speak at the Virginia Beach School Board meetings. Yeah. They're not going to tomorrow or next week after I give my speech, all of a sudden have an epiphany and pull back.
Yeah, no.
But I just want to make sure that all of the rest of the people out there know that somebody is still going to show up and fight every single time, not forgetting.
Right.
Yep. We'll not let it go.
And that's the whole reason why we founded the Kalos Coalition at all, was because we know that as they're going to make these schools harder for these kids, as we know, homes are not always safe spaces. And the Trevor Project did some great research. They put out a statistic in 2023 that said it was only 17%, I think it was 18% of queer youth, 17% of trans youth have any affirming space outside of school in the home.
I believe that because when Alex was in high school, I've said this before. There were so many parents. I just want to get in my car and drive over the house and beat their ass because, what are you doing? Like, you're harming your kid. Like, what is wrong with you? They're sitting in my kitchen right now. How am I showing more love and compassion to your child than you are showing to your own child? Like, I do not understand. My brain cannot compute. And it was so frustrating because my kids are like, no, mom, don't go. You know, of course. And like their friends are like, don't, because they want to be able to come into our home because our home was the only place that they could authentically be themselves. Yeah. And so they don't want to have
any. If you said something, they would lose that space.
They would lose the space. And so they don't feel
safe. You're never
safe
allowed to go over to that lady's house again.
That's exactly right. So I had to think about that, you know, as much as I wanted to say something and how hard it was for me to be nice to these kids' families when I did have to interact with them knowing this information. It was very challenging. And so I believe only 18% of these kids because which is really just disgusting.
And if we take away school,
right,
as one of their main, areas of potentially having that, it's...
Well, and we know that these feelings come directly from their parents and their external environment, from their homes, because those kids then bring those things to school. We see that at, Kellam High School, and so it's just important that we continue to do the work.
And that's the thing a lot of parents don't understand. What was it? W.E.B. Du Bois.
Mm-hmm.
Children learn more from what you are than from what you teach.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely. That
explains why they hate us trans folks so much. Goodness gracious. There's people just being themselves happy. It's going to just ruin the children. Oh, my goodness.
It's awful.
Well,
how dare you?
Yeah, it's the same. And I was just talking about this with black churches. Like, it's that is one place that the black community can feel safe. And where they can express black joy, where white people are not in those spaces. And that like black churches are the place that they can authentically exist in society in a space where they can be themselves and express themselves that, you know what I mean? In authentically themselves. And I think that is one of the biggest problems. That's why there's people that, you know, they don't like those of us that can express ourselves and we can express our opinion. We don't really like this is who we are and this is what we believe. And I'm not ashamed to say it. And if you're ashamed to say it, I think the issue might be you. Yep. And that is really, at the end of the day, when these people don't like me and like I can't get any committees, even after I turned in my talent bank applications, they're not putting me on any city committees because they're like, oh gosh, we don't want that lady on committees.
Anybody but her.
I believe I actually was going to be on the Fine Arts Commission in Chesapeake.
Really?
Author and stuff like that. That was right after the After School Satan Club thing came out. And my friend who was on that committee told me, he was like, no, that came up. And I was like, did you tell them I had nothing to do with it? He's like, I did, but the perception was there.
The perception is there, yeah.
And I'm like, all right, that's fine.
No. Well, this has been an amazing conversation with you, Jeremy. Thank you so much for coming. And we are all, I think, greatly looking forward to Pride in the Peak.
Absolutely.
Which we will be in attendance.
All our continued mutual activism.
And all of, and, yes.
Absolutely.
And you are working with the food bank now.
Yes, okay. I am.
Food banks are so important.
Yeah, I'm actually the volunteer coordinator for the Food Bank of Southeastern Virginia. Oh. So if you guys want to come in and do a volunteering event with Kalos, let me know. We can work something out.
So you do coordination for groups that want to come in. Fantastic. Yep. Okay, we coordinate a group.
We have over 6,000 volunteers a year that help us at the Food Bank Southeast Virginia.
That's awesome.
So that's the database we manage, and corporate groups, individuals, community groups, things like that. So lots of opportunities. Honestly, especially in Virginia Beach, we do a lot in Virginia Beach, and I think we just got another big round of funding from City Council last week.
Yes.
We had been kind of fighting for that.
Of course.
Because we have a mobile market.
Yes, I saw.
Our grocery store on wheels.
It's really beautiful.
And most of our stops, that's predominantly funded by the City of Virginia Beach, which is why it mostly serves Virginia Beach. And I think the current statistic for Virginia Beach specifically is that for every dollar that the city invests in us, they get back six times that in value of food and supporting. Wow. I think it was roughly 40,000 people in Virginia Beach that have food insecurity.
Okay, 40,000.
It's almost 1 in 10.
Yeah, when you think about it that way, and then when you look at the overlap with children and things like that. So yeah, we're super excited about that.
That's fantastic. How do you like that? You like working with the food? And I mean, you get to meet so many different people too.
It's been a really awesome experience. I mean, it's you know, like I was saying at the beginning, you know, this is my first full-time job, full-time for 14 years, you know, since being home.
Yeah.
It was a challenge. I decided not to go back to teaching because being a teacher right now is just,
I know,
it sucks. You know, it's not, you can't do what you actually want to do.
It's not the way you believe in doing it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I can't, especially in Chesapeake, I'd probably get fired pretty quickly if I was a full-time. I was a substitute. They don't really pay attention to substitutes, but if I was a full-time teacher, I don't think I'd last long in Chesapeake.
Yeah.
With the current
school board and everything. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
No, it's a great. I love connecting people with other people. It's just something that's one of the reasons I got into politics. What I like about the political sphere is that's ultimately, I think, a politician's job is often connecting people with people or people with resources. That's it's really what you're supposed to do. Especially on a local level. So I get to do that.
That's awesome.
But you know, we get to work with some large corporations that come in to do events, like, you know. Person next to you helping you in a food line could be the CEO of a large company for all you know, and it's just they're there just helping people. It's refreshing to, and this will sound weird, the challenge of working in LGBT advocacy and with Pride in the Peak is it's you're constantly fighting. There's always going to be somebody who wants to fight against you.
Yep. Yep.
Nobody fights against you when you're talking about I need to feed people. There's no partisan 100%. Element of that, 100%. Except when it comes to school lunches, because Republicans don't want to feed children.
Yeah,
because
we don't want to feed kids.
Listen, Republicans hate poor people. I said what I said.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, no problem talking about. As long as I got a picture of when we're talking about feeding people.
But the mission of the food bank we have no issues selling that mission. So
that's right.
I've worked in a place where I had to recruit volunteers for things.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really hard.
Yeah.
Political campaigns to go canvass or whatever.
Yes.
We have the exact opposite problem.
People want to help.
Way too many people, and we have to find ways to use
every company looking for a group volunteer events.
They need to get their hours.
The military. We have tons of military that come in. We have a huge event coming up with the George Bush because it's George H.W. Bush's 100th birthday.
Coming up.
So we have the 1,000 points of light thing. So we've got a massive event coming in with that.
Yeah.
We don't have challenges with finding volunteers. We have challenges making sure that the volunteer experience is valuable to them. We don't want to just...
Oh, wow. Listen to that. The volunteer experience is valuable.
It is really important. Running a volunteer program, making sure that you deal with your volunteer, train them, treat them respect, know the best ways to contact them.
Respecting
their time. There's so many little tiny things about which can rub some or make the entire experience harmful for them or negative and can there's an art to it and also a science.
I love it.
Exactly. And the people that take that seriously, again, I don't have to worry about volunteer retention. I'll get volunteers.
You'll get volunteers.
But at the same time, I want volunteer retention. Yeah. I want to grow that. I want to say, instead of 6,000 a year, let's get to 7,000 a year.
Right.
Because that means that we're finding things to do that are getting...
That need 7,000 instead of 6.
Instead of 6,000. Mm-hmm. It means we're serving more people. It means,
That's right.
Last fiscal year, we moved over 21 million pounds of food in our service area. And for those who don't know how big our food bank is geographically, when we talk about
it's big in Norfolk, areas, right?
Our main warehouse and our offices are in Norfolk, right on Tidewater Drive but we actually cover a service area that goes all the way up to Maryland, in the entire Eastern Shore, all the way down to the North Carolina border, all the way from the ocean out to Franklin, Isle of Wight. It's 4,700 square miles that we cover.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
We only have about 75 staff. So everything else that we do is with volunteers. All of our distributions, all of our sorting, all of our, much of our warehouse work, packing up our backpacks for our backpack programs for our local schools. All of that is volunteer-based.
That right there is, so I have such, I'm very careful about my, donating to different nonprofits and different organizations because on high level, I look at what are you paying your board, your CEOs, what are you, how much per dollar is actually going out into the community? And for example, I was told CHKD thrift stores who are owned locally here, their agreement with CHKD is only a penny on the dollar. All of that stuff is donated to those thrift stores. They sell that to the community, and their agreement is only CHKD said, you can use our name for a penny on the dollar because you're just a thrift store. The people that own the CHKD thrift stores are very wealthy people, but I digress. But food bank, knowing how much you serve with 75 people, is huge.
92 cents of every dollar goes directly to food
servicing. That's huge. That's impressive. And
just got a donation.
Yes. Okay. Very good.
Tell the folks who are listening how they can support.
How can we support? I know.
As far as the food bank, so our website is foodbankonline.org. It was just completely revamped in January. It is beautiful. They did a fantastic job, our development team, which is I'm part of the development team. But you can both volunteer as well as donate directly on the website. It's super easy. Also, if you, the development team, we also manage if anybody wants to do a food drive or anything, any type of event. You can reach out to us on the development team, or me directly is fine, and I can connect you with our community engagement manager.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, actually, the biggest need we have immediate is food donations. It's a down period of time. Our sorting room, actually, if you go to our Facebook, our social media team recently posted a video to show how empty our current sorting room is as far as, just direct donations. But, we can help coordinate food drives as well. And,
very good.
But, yeah. But food time and money
are
the ways that you can donate to support us. They're all valuable. So.
That's amazing. Speaking of respecting people's time, it's way late.
We have once again rambled on.
I know. So shall we end here?
Yes, at the, absolutely. At our time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, thank you for
thank you so much for
joining us.
No, we really appreciate it.
We're really looking forward to Pride in the Peak.
I know.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Pride in the Peak. Hopefully we get you back on the show again because we could have talked for another.
I know we could. I know
we barely made it. To the
Well, we would love to have your daughter the food drive on as well. We could we could talk for hours about politics. But,
yes.
But where we have you and your daughter come and actually sit down and talk about your experiences.
And I've talked to her about it. She told me she would be willing to do
she
it.
She would be willing?
So,
okay,
yes,
great.
We'll have to figure out a time that works.
That works for everybody,
but yes,
yeah.
She's told me that she has no problems doing it. Like
we
I said,
would love that.
She's spoken with He, She, Z, and We. She is comfortable to a point where she knows that being a young trans, 18-year-old, how valuable that can be for other kids to hear her experience,
okay,
to know she enjoyed her experience where she got to do that before.
Okay.
So yes.
Good.
I
okay.
Would say
so then,
please
we'll
send it. Tell her to come out to the trans family dinners.
Oh my gosh.
I got to talk to her about. Yeah. I got to talk to her about your. So she runs D&D campaigns.
Well,
she
really,
she is a DM. I forgot to tell her that you guys have.
And we need to get you guys to come to trans family dinners.
I know.
So
I know.
And you live in Chesapeake, so maybe I don't know. Well,
we really want to get one going out in Chesapeake because the idea is to spread them out across the seven cities.
Yes.
We want
to
get
love to have one going on eventually.
Yes.
One every month in each of the seven cities.
Mm-hmm. That would be
thinking about a location in Chesapeake that I know would be a good one. I mean, we
perfect.
Yeah.
See, that's how we get it started.
Spreading that trans joy.
Yes.
Shannon would host it at our sensory farm.
Oh, yes.
That'd be so cool.
She did a lot of hosting for PFLAG. She did, She and We's family connections and stuff she's done.
She's great.
And it's right in Hickory, which is, I love it.
Which is great. Perfect. Yes, that's great.
Shannon, I bet she would host one.
I bet Shannon would do it. Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, we have Trans Family Dinner, just to recap, is April 18th, and it's at ODU. Where? ODU?
ODU at the Web Center. So if you go to the Web Center. You should be able to find us. I believe we'll have the actual
room. 1307. Room 1307.
Room
1307. Room 1307. And then also on May 2nd, we're having another one that's hosted at Minority Aid Support Services Center over at in Norfolk. We're going to have food catered there. We'll have a nice little conversation about sexual health and wellness. One's separate for parents and for children. So it should be a good time for people to come out and have fun and just, yeah.
Okay, fantastic.
Learn about other things.
Awesome.
Well, that's amazing. All right. Well,
I will try to get my little introvert out of her shell.
Yeah, well, hopefully we get to see you at dinner and D&D.
Yeah.
Because that's been a lot of fun. Well, it's been great. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us talk transparently on Talking Transparency. And always remember that no matter what you're facing out there, trans joy defeats hate every time.
Thank you. Yay!
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Collective Tattoo and the Kalos Coalition. We are listener supported, so if you like the show, please consider donating to us on Patreon at patreon.com/talkingtransparency. Like, share, and subscribe across social media, and be sure to visit our Linktree at linktree.com/talkingtrans.